Blog Talk Radio.
Found Masonic Home Companion, and we found you. I'm your host for the next little while, Dale Graham. It's an absolute pleasure having you here. Thanks. Want to start the program with a bit of a tribute. Strange times we live in, but times nevertheless. How many times on the program have we spoken about how young and fresh this country is? So that means we're going to face many challenges for the very first time. I don't know if it makes it any better or worse. I don't have any perspective on that. If we were Spain or Turkey or Albania or Ireland or would it be any different that there have been battles fought over our countries and through our countries? Holland used as a corridor for armies for centuries. What does it get us all? We have to avoid some traps. We have to avoid making this an issue of nationalism. Traitor is a brand we would put on the face of somebody who has wronged our country. But a long time ago, we lost that innocence. We live in a global community in every sense of the word. Ebola, disease happening in a place thousands of miles away is affecting us, and we're taking precautions so that our families, our children, our friends, our neighbors are safe. A shot is fired in a jungle far away or across a desert region, and somebody is taking a picture of the event and sending it to you and me. Instantly, the suppression of information is becoming much more difficult for despots to accomplish. And there are no good guys in that conversation. It's just whether we can tolerate the censorship and manipulation. I think there's more to the world than a military operation. But it saddens me, the events that happened have perhaps taken our great country in a direction we all knew would happen one day, but nobody wanted to sacrifice his or her son for this one. You think of the soldier doing his job. A bullet was aimed at much as at you and me and what we believe in. But he was the one that did the dying. It shames me to think that I should stand up on my hind legs and be more indignant than that young man's family or his colleagues. Just give me this minute of triumph. The human spirit will endure. Let's give him that tribute, huh?
Thank you.
don't think the threat is handled only by the young. They continue to pick up arms. The threat is around us. The world is not a place for fools, and certainly not a place for paranoia. It's a place for watchful attention. And that's what we must do, brethren. I've got your back. Two boys died, huh? What a strange, strange world we live in. Shakespeare reminds us, let's make us medicines of our great revenge to cure this deadly grief. Try not to pay too much attention to the shenanigans of the politicians. That's what they do. They have to change everything to suit some gain or leverage. Maybe there'll be some fear-mongering. That's not unusual when these things go on. But apart from all of that, there's work that needs to be done by serious-minded people. Enough. Life goes on, and so does the show, and this is coming up to getting ready for the winter solstice, aren't you? Yeah, I knew you would be doing that. That's coming on the 21st of December at 23:03. Yeah. So, it's an interesting time, as usual. I thank you very much for the wonderful support, the outpouring of support that we've had lately. Reformatting, reconnecting, and getting back to business of Freemasonry. And the series seems to be going over enormously well. And for those of you who are sharing this site and connection with the outside world, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. As a homage to Elvi, thank you very much. this is an interesting focus, I think. I was thinking about my last conversations with you. If the good man has a better conscience, then he has command over the universe when day slips into night. Neither hero nor king nor pauper or sinner. He retrieves dreams of his own making. When did Freemasonry come away from the metaphysical? Has she failed us in some way that we no longer worship a lunar existence? Do we disguise the truth of the tarot by allowing it to be mocked by fools? Do we dismiss the mathematics to predict by remaining illiterate? Kabbalah? Yeah. And what of the presence of past lives? What is the presence of past lives? How many old men do we see weep at the graveside of their wife? Or visit and carry on the conversation as if it was over breakfast that morning, planning his day? Do we mock him? No. We see ourselves in those actions, don't we? One day. Has the Masonic bark faced one too many storms to lie waterlogged at safe harbor? Just thinking. No adventure of the mind is worth starting unless you can commit to finish. And no one really knows that finish. No one. It necessarily has to be stated that it's not the craft that offers or does not offer. It's the practices. If we were in an area where Freemasonry is setting up a lodge, then we're not necessarily going to be putting down our tools in order to have deeper philosophical conversation. We want a shelter first. It's not that one is less important than the other. It's the time of it. First we build. We'll get around to it. It's a place where we can gather. We need a place to gather, a place of some permanence, because we believe that we're committed to our communities and we're committed to bringing the values of Freemasonry into our communities for the betterment, not a quarrel. If somebody else has a better way of living and contributing to the community, then by all means, we lay no claim to perfection. We're striving. Just trying to get there. Let Hercules himself do what he may, said Hamlet. The cat will mew and the dog will have his day. Thanks. That's from our friend Bill. Little Billy Shakespeare. Interesting day, this. Mind if I talk to you a little bit about the Lodge of Antiquity, number one, under the Grand Register of Quebec? Is that all right? Thank you. I appreciate the support. In considering the upward trend of Freemasonry in some of the famous British regiments, the student will find much of romance interwoven with the events of actual historic value of the process and kindness of heart of men long since passed away and otherwise forgotten. And before I forget, I digress. Laura Secord, we've talked about her. Her husband was a Freemason. Well, that doesn't make Laura any less or more than what she was, but it's an interesting kind of a characteristic. It's like saying, you know, that old Dodge that passed me the other day, that was driven by a Freemason. That's only important to a brother if it's important to the brother. Otherwise, it's just a fellow driving down the road in a Buick. It's just a woman on a mission doing what she could to protect. Whether or not the influence was Masonic or not, what that would be. And I would put that to people when they tell me this song was written by, this symphony was composed by, really, sorry, but so what? So what? Tell me how did that person live? Was he or she sincere in their beliefs? Why would I ask that question about somebody tromping through the woods with a message to tip off our people, eventually our people, about an invasion? Why does it matter? Well, in the big scope of things, it doesn't, I guess. I'm hard-pressed, for me, to find that it matters, because it sounds eerily like self-aggrandizement. Look at me, because I'm a Mason. How in the world did we ever come to that? I know. I'll burst into flames for this one, but how are we so satisfied with attaching a personal claim to events? It's not enough that we talk about the event and the effect, the planning, the people that contributed, but we ascribe it to a particular person. I mean, really? We're part of the cult of celebrity? When in the world did that happen? But then, I like to know that Dunkerley, I like to know that Thomas Dunkerley lived, and I like to know about the man, because I can't know about every single person in that period. But if I can study about some people that did something noteworthy, then I can learn. I have a hook to hang my hat on, a center point that gives me a sense of order to the events. I'll dash off and pick up a copy of the book, a book on Washington that I read, well, it was about a year ago now, maybe a year and a half ago. Fantastic book, but it talked about the men of the time and the commitment of these fellows. I had no idea. I hear this drivel about this fellow cutting down the cherry tree one more time. Well, I know that here we have to aggrandize our heroes with supernatural capabilities. I mean, yeah, I get that. But I don't need it. Maybe I do. Maybe in my weaker moments, it's like, oh, he's, when I'm talking to a schoolboy, is it better just to tell him about this fable? Well, I need to say, this is a fable that's told about this man. And he was, by the way, he did some really interesting things. And by the way, he was a Freemason. Now, what bearing does that have on that guy? Well, the bearing isn't on that guy. It's on me. It's like it makes what I do, what I believe in, somehow more. It makes me wonder. No, I'm not. Otherwise, if I don't think about the meaning of all of that, then unfortunately, one of the past grandmasters that was slagging me a bit, which I'm prone to, is absolutely right. I'm just, you know, I'm just blowing smoke. Philosophizing, as he said, don't go near him, you know. You ready to philosophize again, Dale? Yeah, well, that's... I didn't know it was philosophizing. I thought it was talking to friends. Silly, eh? Let me talk to you about the Grand Register of Quebec, number one, Lodge of Antiquity. It's pretty cool. Considering the upward trend in some of the famous regiments, you'll find romance interwoven with the events of actual historic value in tracing the history of this lodge, formerly Lodge of Social and Military Virtues, number 222, in the 46th British Regiment. It is necessary to follow the movements of the regiment in its wanderings during a period of over a century. Raised in 1741 and being known as Murray's Bucks, its first engagement was in Scotland. Later in Ireland, the Masons in the Corps were granted a traveling warrant by the Grand Lodge on March the 4th, 1752. In 1757, it was found in Nova Scotia, and the next year formed part of the army, which went down to defeat at Ticonderoga in July 1758. Its colonel being killed, the command devolved upon the major, Era Massey, who had fought at Culloden, won renown at Fort Niagara in 1757, and again at Fort Levi, listen to me, Philistine. The following year, on the advance of the army under General Amherst to the surrender by the Marquis de Vaudreuil of Montreal, the last stronghold of the French, September 8th, 1760. At this time, Colonel Massey, retiring from the 46th, advanced rapidly in his profession, later gaining a peerage as Baron Clarinda of County Limerick and promoted Field Marshal. In 1761 and 62, the regiment is fighting at Martinique and Cuba, and later, 1764 to 65, in Canada, around Niagara and Detroit in the fierce warfare of Pontiac and his Indian Confederates. In 1776, it is again in America, operating with much success in the Revolutionary War at Brooklyn, New York, White Plains, Fort Washington, and following the Americans through New Jersey, wintered at Amboy. In the spring of 1777, under Colonel Byrd, it destroyed the enemy's supplies at Peekskill on the Hudson. Then, with General Howe and the defeat of Washington's army at the Brandywine River, the 11th of September, next Germantown, where Colonel Byrd fell on October 4th. A notable date because it's my birthday. Next, the regiment is in Philadelphia with the Army of Occupation, and later in the fight at Monmouth, New Jersey, in June of 1776, on the passage of the Army to New York, and in September with Major General Charles Gray. He became Earl Gray. Yeah, that one. In the attack on New Bedford, Massachusetts. And then again with Gray in the surprise and slaughter at night of Colonel Baylor's horse at Trapon, New Jersey, on the west side of the Hudson, September 28th. And while scouting and reconnoitering in that section, is recalled to New York going aboard the fleet with the Army under Major General Grant, which sailed for the West Indies on the 2nd of November. In 1805, it was found guarding the island of Dominica when the French fleet appears. Excuse me, and landing 4,000 men, sets fire to the town. And after, in vain, demanding the surrender of the chief officers, departs, taking on board regimental property, including the Masonic chest. I need a Buckley's. Just happen to have three fingers of Buckley's sitting right here. Jeez. I think that's a 12-year-old Buckley's that I'm... But I could be wrong there. Help me out, brethren. Is that a 10-year-old Buckley's or a... Oh, no, that's a 12-year-old Buckley's. Me. After correspondence, the Masonic property was restored some 2 years later by order of the French government, with complimentary apologies. Mm-hmm. The loss of the warrant is recorded by Grand Lodge 1805, with revival in July the same year. Owing to the brave defense of the island, the royal authority was issued permitting the 46th to bear the word Dominica in its colors and appointments. Here. It has traveled to Australia and spent many years in southern India. Being much reduced in numbers, it returned to England in 1833. The regiment continued on in its travels, arriving in Montreal in 1845, when the lodge already having been dormant owing to changes in the regiment, what remained of the regalia, jewels, books, was transferred to Brother Captain W. Child, its custodian, to Sergeant Major W. Shepherd, W. Robinson, and W. R. Balfour, to form a permanent semi-military lodge in Montreal. The warrant having been returned to Grand Lodge, a new one at the same number was issued July 1st, 1847, when the above-named brethren were installed in St. George's Lodge, Montreal, and its career began with varying success. It's interesting, and there's been so many notable lodges, that network of St. George's Lodge, very, very upstanding, I would say, each and every one of them. In 1855, it joined in the formation of the Grand Lodge of Canada, the name being changed in 1857 to the Lodge of Antiquity, authorized to wear gold instead of silver and enrolled at the head of the list. After the formation of the Grand Lodge of Quebec, it became affiliated as number one, and the brethren were later commissioned to wear a centenary jewel. The famous Bible of the regiment, which, from the family history written in its pages during a series of years to 1869, proved to be the property of Benjamin West of Bedford, Massachusetts, was taken away by men of the 46th when that village was sacked on the 5th of September 1778 during the expedition under Gray. And the following month, when the regiment was foraging and reconnoitering, also under Gray, also already alluded to on the west side of the Hudson, the Masonic chest with the Bible and regalia, together with other regimental baggage, was seized by a body of American troops operating near the British base. Now note, the author talks about the Bible, and so do I. There is no Masonic Bible, at least as far as I've ever heard, but I've heard that term used, just like I hear a lot of things that are used and almost become colloquial. But if you check it out, the Bible is what it is. It's not a Masonic Bible. It'd be like saying there's a Masonic Quran. The work is the Masonic Torah. It is what it is. It's the law. Washington at the time, in October 1778, had his headquarters at Fredericksburg. That was a little village a few miles distant on the east side of the Hudson and was regularly informed of all movements in that section. When the above-mentioned capture became known to him, he ordered it returned under a flag of truce, the Masonic property at the same time sending a message that the Americans were not warring against institutions of benevolence. Ha ha! It's one of us. In confirmation of these particular events, we have the very clear statement found in the oration delivered at the service held in Boston in memory of the general 2 months after his decease. Whatever Masonic degree was conferred upon Washington in connection with this Bible, which was a strong tradition handed down by brothers Lacey, Child, and Maxwell of the old regiment, and which we do not attempt to cast aside, still following the march of events, the honor could only have been conferred before the book came into possession of the regiment. Washington was made, passed, and raised at Fredericksburg, Virginia, 1752 to 1753. Of this fact, the records speak for themselves. How often have we heard that Washington was an entered apprentice? Only. Only? Sorry. He was made a Mason. But now we hear he was passed and raised. In 1782, territorial distinctions having been adopted for the infantry, the 46th was named the South Devonshire. In 1903, the Grand Master of New South Wales, addressing Grand Lodge, said, "The earliest record of duly recognized Masonic work was in the year 1816 when the Lodge of Social and Military Virtues held meetings at Sydney. And that lodge, number 227, was its sponsor for Australian Social 260, granted by Ireland in 1820. Immediately after the defeat at Brandywine, the Light Battalion won the distinction of the Red Feathers, the 20th of September, 1777, by a night attack with the bayonet on a detachment of 1,500 men hidden in a forest under General Wayne, which had been ordered by Washington to attack any troops who might be found from the main body. Major General Gray was sent with a force of light infantry on the 46th and those of five regiments as a counterblast, and he, having detached the flints from the guns, approached Wayne's sleeping camp in silence in two divisions, and by the light of the campfires made such havoc with the bayonet that those who escaped vowed vengeance, sending word that should they meet again, no quarter would be given. The light bobs replied that to prevent others from suffering, they had stained their red feathers. And throughout the war, the light battalion was so distinguished, and later by royal warrant, the 46 were permitted to wear a red ball tuft in memory of bravery on that occasion. The following month, at the Battle of Germantown, the men under Wayne, seeing the light infantry, cried out, "Have at the bloodhounds, revenge Wayne's affair at Poilly." Notwithstanding the excitement of war and hurried marches, the brethren met and many fraternal visits were exchanged and kindnesses shown, even to prisoners between the contending forces. The late brother Charles E. Myers, in his records and writings of the Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania, says, "In the lodge, during the turmoil of war, the Royalists and Federalists were wont to meet upon the square, both sides meeting upon the level. The Marquis de Caen, Governor General of New France, under whose regime of Fort Duquesne, which Pittsburgh captured by the British in November 1758, was built and was a member of the Masonic Order." Duquesne University, you've been to Pittsburgh, that fork in the forks of the river, beautiful location. The lodge has in its archives a few of the old jewels, some of tin, very crude workmanship, also the jewels of the past master and warden, together with a silver trowel engraved with the donor's name and date, 1819, which are much esteemed. The Bible is still with the regiment, and in its new lodge, Dominica, is preserved with care. While the Lodge of Antiquity has a facsimile copy with about 30 of the pages containing the written data of the West family, which have been photo-incorporated, with which is bound a letter written by Lieutenant Colonel Lacey, in which he endeavored to trace the history of the Bible read to him before the Royal Gloucester Lodge in Southampton in 1870. Interesting, think about it. The history of the Bible is the actual book. Eh? The lodge holds an annual military night on the 17th of March in honor of its Irish origin. When our military brethren, both members and visitors, appear in the uniforms of the corps to which they are or were attached. And the banquet hall, fittingly decorated with banners and shields and arms, is alive with music, song, and story. Recalling in mind feats of daring and the fraternal actions of our military brethren of the past. A little something to think about when you hear about the excitement, I guess. Am I too old to feel that when I think about battle and walking through the woods at night quietly and then confronting the enemy with a bayonet attack? Whew. Wow. It's not exactly the fixation of the victory that I think about. Let Hercules himself do what he may, the cat will mew, and the dog will have his day. I will have such revenges on you both that all the world shall. I will do such things, what they are I know not, but they shall be the terrors of the earth. Revenge, huh? Revenge. That was King Lear talking to two of his three daughters. Unbelievable. He saw me and yielded. That I may justly say, with the hook-nosed fellow of Rome, I came, saw, and overcame. The hook-nosed fellow of Rome, it's referring to as Julius Caesar. Thank you. That's from Henry IV. I haven't seen that play. Have any of you? I heard it's very, very good. I want to talk about things coming up in November, but I also don't want to be premature. There's a poignancy here. This great country comes together when we begin to show our nature. After all of the clods pointing fingers at us for decades, saying we don't have a personality in this country, don't have character in this country, it's usually been some idiot journalist or some foolish politician saying it, somebody that really is just making money selling words. The fact is, we know very deeply the kind of people that we are in this country, and we have a very clear line. This is not, we may be very polite people, but we also understand the line. And we collectively, coast to coast to coast, understand when that line has been crossed. We don't need politicians. We don't need lawyers, and we don't need police. Good men understand that line. And that's when things get very dangerous for people that threaten us. Oh, we are committed and we are obedient. But the world needs to know it's the kind of country that we are. Make of that what you will. Make that what you will. I want to talk about holy mackerel, the time is flying here. I didn't realize that. we need to lighten this up a little bit. Can I talk to you a little bit about why a woman cannot be present in an open lodge of Freemasons? You've heard that. Done too much? Yes, of course. Let's beat that one, you know. Let's draw that one out. That's like having a conversation about what the best tread is on a winter snow tire. All right. Yeah, it is, but what? So what? How about like something a little more today? It's not exactly cold. It's how about something about moral law? How does that strike you? Or you're seeing acts of immorality. You're being committed because, it's terrible. You think about it. I'm not going to mention names because there's when people commit tragic acts against this country or are despicable, I believe that that their name should be purged and never spoken again. I like the Anglo-Saxon kings. Nothing. You're gone. Your name is struck. The Egyptians had a way. They would carve your name off the obelisks. You were gone. You were disappeared. And I think that's the way this name should never be. Some of these names, these perpetrators' names, should never be used again. Now, as soon as you say that, I think some idiot is going to name his child. We can't do much about idiots except keep an eye on them and, you know, they are what they are. They cause too much mayhem, so we have to control them because they always make things sound much worse than they are, and they always are speaking from their own perspective. They don't give a crap about the rest of us. So we need to keep an eye on their idiots. They'll send their idiots. So no, they won't send their idiots. Their idiots are trying to define a whole noble nation and a whole faith, and our idiots are ready to do the same. Who made them spokesman on behalf of anybody? Just because they could come up with some homicidal act? Pathetic. Pathetic. Better that we're rid of all of them, the idiots. The zealots, jeez. You just change the mask. Just change the sound of the voice and the culture. The zealot is a zealot. They're just scary individuals. When they get together, they seem to validate, but they're still stupid as bark on a birch. Let me talk about moral law, hey? This is a good time to do it. And think about it. I was reading an article from Pietri Stone. Yeah, I like that. And it was talking about making reference to the declaration of secular masonry. And I wanted to, apparently has caused a bit of concern around the planet, around the Masonic planet, because I gather this is considered wrong-minded, that there was the question of whether Freemasonry is spiritual. Well, you know, really, I don't know. I can't say I would agree with you if that's the case, because you're taking me down a path that seems to contradict some other statements and principles of the order. Your faith doesn't really matter, and I have to get my head around that. Well, that's not a hard one for me to get my head around, but it's a question that's worthy of discussion, lively discussion. It's great fun. You can poke. It's like poking a stick at people that are hotheads. Not fun for them, but I know that's so terrible to say. Never poke fun at a hothead because, you know, it's just too easy. And they never really understand that all you're doing is poking them. So anyway, the moral high ground is that we are secular, and that doesn't come easy. For all of those who we've heard talk about the order as a Christian society, where did they get that? They're just making that up. They're absolutely just spinning that. There's no validity to that. Except, is it true? So, give me this bearing. If I say it, does it make it so? Well, if I say it, it's my opinion. So somebody can say, yeah, absolutely, it's secular, it's non-secular. Yeah, okay, yeah, absolutely. But the truth of the matter, the fact is that it welcomes men of all faiths. And we will get into serious conversation about that. About our Hindi brethren, who is able to put many facets on his or her aspect of the Creator. Or people that are so devout that the name itself, we've long lost that in our history, some of us, where the name itself could not and was not spoken out of respect. Now we hear it as part of a curse. Good grief, we can hear 7 and 8 year olds cursing and using that kind of language. Well, it's not horrible. We pointing fingers at somebody isn't going to make it any better, except it might make us feel a little more virtuous. But truth of the matter is we handle it with grace and diplomacy. And the world around us, I think we all can admit that what needs to be brought forward are our diplomats, so that we can talk out the issues. We can think through them. And it's dangerous because there are a lot of people that will say, oh my goodness, you're sounding racist. Oh my goodness, you're sounding racist. Well, well, chicken little, the sky's not falling. We're talking about some serious stuff here. The sky's not falling. So suck it up and sit down. If you can't do anything more than flap your hands and run around the room, sit the hell down. We have something serious to talk about. Can men from different cultures and different faith base come together? Well, absolutely. This is masonry. This is the opportunity, and there is proof in every single district. I'd like to say every single lodge. The teachings, we pass them on only if we're students and we understand the depths of them. Other than that, we're just creating new local traditions as we go along. We're creating our own history as we go along, and we're trying to rewrite Masonic history while we're doing it. I think that's a serious, serious problem. When we slip into that kind of complacency where we're able to say that the way I think about it is the way it is, and if you don't agree with me, well, you've got it wrong. What fuses us and binds us together is when we can come around the facts. We can join up if we are fact-based. It's not to stop the opinions about the price of tea. That's our prerogative. That's great fun. But the fact is, there are certain things that we have passed on through our history for reasons. So come and join me. Can declare yourself an ancient. Keep a watchful eye on the moderns. Don't let those scallywags get away with that new rhetoric. They'll be mighty persuasive. They're going to have to. Their tongues will be dripping honey to try and sell this one. But keep your eye on the bottom line here. Are they respecting the first local traditions? Are they respecting the ancient charges? About time I write to Grand Lodge, I think, and say, well, instead of hiding that at the back of the Constitution, Book of Constitution, just put that up front and declare the importance so that when you go to read it and go to study it, it's not the last thing you read as you close your eyes at night. It's the first thing you see when you open the book. And perhaps, only perhaps, the thinking Mason will pick it up. Well, that's wrong-minded thinking, or thinking Mason will discover it and read it and digest it already. What are the moral privileges of Masonry? Ah, come on. Are there moral privileges? Well, interesting way of thinking is that to our ego, we have to have some privilege. We do this because it defines us. We do this because of titles and displays and the sense that it's conferring a distinction. Is that really? That's all we've got, yeah. Well, that's very powerful in the world, that need to be recognized. The morality of Masonry requires us to deal justly with others, not to defraud, cheat, or wrong them of their just dues or rights. But it goes further. Regarding all as the children of one great father, it considers man as bound by piety, Masonic morality, and fraternal bonds to minister to the wants of the destitute and afflicted. And that we may be enabled to fulfill this behest of humanity, it strictly enjoins industry and frugality, that so our hands may ever be filled with the means of exercising that charity to which our hearts should ever dispose us. That's the moral privilege, to serve and assist. Moral duties, the science of free, and excuse the fact that this is written with a heavy, a misogynist hand. Sorry about that. The science of Freemasonry embraces every branch of moral duty, whether it be applied to God, our neighbor, or ourselves. This peculiarity in the system is expressly inculcated on every member of the order at his first admission into a lodge. So anxiously has Freemasonry provided against any mistake as to its peculiar tenets. No brother can be ignorant of the great points of Masonic duty, although he may be unacquainted with the minuter details. The traditions and peculiar doctrines which are included in the more abstruse portions of the lectures may have remained unexplored. But of its moral and religious tendency, he cannot be uninformed. Every branch of moral duty, whether it's applied to the Creator, to our neighbor, or ourselves. So what is this moral law we're talking about here? Moral, how do we understand moral duty if we can't understand the meaning of moral law? Writers on this subject have given to the moral law of nature three characters, which make it still more appropriate as a system for the government of a universal, ancient, and unchangeable institution. For it is said in the first place to be eternal, always having existed, as Cicero calls it, an eternal something, coeval with God. Next, it is universal, all mankind of every country and religion being subject to it, whence the Roman historian appropriately calls it jus hominum, or the law of men. And lastly, it is immutable, which immutability necessarily arises from the immutability of the Creator, the author of the law. Canons? Is this canons? This moral law of nature, being the code adopted for the government of the Masonic fraternity, it is proper that some inquiry should be made into the nature of the duties which it enjoins and the arts which it prohibits, the acts which it prohibits. And in the first place, the very existence of the law implies the existence of a supreme power, which must have enacted it and of a responsibility to him for obedience to it. And hence the same charge which commences by declaring that a Mason is bound to obey the moral law, continues the precept by asserting that if he rightly understands the art, he will never be a stupid atheist nor an irreligious libertine. Atheism, therefore, which is a rejection of a supreme superintending creator, and an irreligious libertine, which, in the language of the day, signified a denial of all moral responsibility. Irreligious libertinism. The libertine, a denial of all moral responsibility. Whatever happens, happens to you. Or as one wag said, it sucks to be you. Yeah, really. Childish, eh? Which in the language of the day signified a denial of all moral responsibility are offenses against the moral law because they deny its validity and condemn its sanctions, and hence they are to be classed as Masonic crimes. This is the only point of speculative theology with which Masonry interferes. But here it is stern and uncompromising. A man must believe in the Creator and recognize a moral responsibility to the Creator, or he cannot be made a Mason. Or if being made, he subsequently adopts these views, he cannot remain in the order. The first class of crimes which are laid down in the constitutions as rendering their perpetrators liable to Masonic jurisdiction are offenses against the moral law. Every Mason, say the old charges of 1722, is obliged by his nature to obey the moral law. Now, this moral law is not to be considered as confined to the Decalogue of Moses, within which narrow limits the ecclesiastical writers technically restrain it, but rather as alluding to what is called the lex naturae, or the law of nature. This law of nature has been defined by an able but not recent writer on the subject to be the will of God relating to human actions grounded on the moral differences of things. And because discoverable by natural light, obligatory upon all mankind. This is stuff coming from Cyril's knee. Moral law. The law that permeates everything beyond what man can create, what humanity has created. This is the moral law to which the old charge already cited refers and which it declares to be the law of Masonry. And this was wisely done, for it is evident that no law less universal could have been appropriately selected for the government of an institution whose prominent characteristic is its universality. The precepts of Jesus could not have been made obligatory on a Jew. A Christian would have denied the sanctions of the Quran. A Mohammedan must have rejected the law of Moses, and a disciple of Zoroaster would have turned from all of his teachings of his Zend Avesta. The universal law of nature, which the authors of the old charges have properly called the moral law, because it is, as Conybeare remarks, a perfect collection of all those moral doctrines and precepts which have a foundation in the nature and reason of things, is therefore the only law suited in every respect to be adopted as the Masonic code. Fantastic. This is good stuff. This is good stuff. This is getting down past the drivel. No more drivel. No more room for drivel. You want to know, stupid libertine? You know it. You know it. An atheist? You know it. There you go. We'll talk. Thank you for joining me today. It's been great to have you here with Masonic Home Companion. I hope we reach out to you wherever you are in your big comfortable chair with your big fat glass of Kool-Aid sitting in your squeezy little hand. We'll top it up again. I'm going to let you listen to a little bit of one of my favorite pieces here. Yes, I'm just feeling like I want to be, let the world know I'm going to fly the flag all week a little higher and get out there and let everybody know that Canada is on the map and There's a little bit of foolishness going on. We'll stand up and take care of it. Every one of us do what we can to support one another. The world will be a much better place, and the grand creator of the universe will be watching your back and my back, and the world will be a better place. Here's a little tune that when I was a much younger man, we'd get together with a few of my friends. We were, at the time, learning how to run a political campaign. And we were fairly successful at it. It was great fun. Very hard work, great fun. But these are men who are taking life here in Canada very seriously, and the need to keep the knuckleheads from running things. They're still doing it. Wonderful friends. So this goes out to them and to all my Masonic brethren. This is, of course, by Stan Rogers, one of my favorites, called Barrett's Privateers.
Oh, the year was 1778. How I wish I was in Sherbrooke now. A letter of marque came from the king to the scummiest vessel I've ever seen. God damn them all. I was told we'd cruise the seas for American gold. We'd fire no guns, shed no tears. Now I'm a broken man on a Halifax pier, the last of Barrett's privateers. Oh, well said Barrett, cried the town, how I wish I was in Sherbrooke now. For 20 brave men, all fishermen, who would make for him the Antelope's crew? God damn them all. I was told we'd cruise the seas for American gold. We'd fire no guns, shed no tears. Now I'm a broken man on a Halifax pier, the last of Barrett's privateers. The Antelope sloop was a sickening sight. How I wish I was in Sherbrooke now. She'd a list to the port and her sails in rags, and the cook in the scuppers with the staggers and jags. God damn them all. I was told we'd cruise the seas for American gold. We'd fire no guns, shed no tears. Now I'm a broken man on a Halifax pier, the last of Barrett's privateers. On the king's birthday we put to sea. How I wish I was in Sherbrooke now. We were 91 days to Montego Bay, pumping like madmen all the way. God damn them all. I was told we'd cruise the seas for American gold. We'd fire no guns, shed no tears. Now I'm a broken man on a Halifax pier, the last of Barrett's privateers. On the 96th day we sailed again. I wish I was in Sherbrooke now. When a bloody great Yankee hove in sight, with our crack 4 pounders we made to fight. God damn them all. I was told we'd cruise the seas for American gold. We'd fire no guns, shed no tears. Now I'm a broken man on a Halifax pier, the last of Barrett's privateers. The Yankee lay low down with gold. I wish I was in Sherbrooke now. She was broad and fat and loose in stays, but the catcher took the Antelope 2 whole days. God damn them all. I was told we'd cruise the seas for American gold. We'd fire no guns, shed no tears. Now I'm a broken man on a Halifax pier, the last of Barrett's privateers. Then at length we stood 2 cables away. I wish I was in Sherbrooke now. Our crack 4 pounders made an awful din, but with 1 fat ball the Yanks stole us in. God damn them all. I was told we'd cruise the seas for American gold. We'd fire no guns, shed no tears. Now I'm a broken man on a Halifax pier, the last of Barrett's privateers. The Antelope shook and pitched on her side. I wish I was in Sherbrooke now. Barrett was smashed like a bowl of eggs, and the main truck carried off both men eggs. God damn them all. I was told we'd cruise the seas for American gold. We'd fire no guns, shed no tears. Now I'm a broken man on a Halifax pier, the last of Barrett's privateers. So here I lay in the 23rd year. How I wish I was in Sherbrooke now. It's been 6 years since we sailed away, and I just made Halifax yesterday. God damn them all. I was told we'd cruise the seas for American gold. We'd fire no guns, shed no tear. Now I'm a broken man on a Halifax pier. The last of the is
privateer. Hard not to be feel like a Canadian boy when you hear Stan Rogers.
Oh, the year was 1778. How I wish I was.
You come back soon. We'll have a good time. Here's a little Stomp and Tom. See you next time.
We got to correct that a little bit. It's all goes by the moon, you know. You might think you're Scooby, but the man in the moon is a newbie, sailing on to glory, away in the golden dory, sailing on to glory, away in the golden dory. Cusp is Dan's a Newfoundland, he dreamt that he had three wishes. He took Mars and all the stars, and he turned them into big fishes. He said the sky was much too dry, and he made a wavy motion. And the moon, like a boat, began to float upon the starry ocean. And you might think it's goofy, but the man in the moon is a newbie, sailing on to glory, away in the golden dory, sailing on to glory, away in the golden dory. One night he strayed to the Milky Way to cast his net upon it. When he spied the tail of what he thought was a whaley harpoon alien comet. He never had a pot for the fish that he got, so he had to use the big dipper. And the sun by Jove was a very good stove for cooking up Nelson kippers. You might think it's goofy, but the man in the moon is a newbie, sailing on to glory, away in the golden dory, sailing on to glory, away in the golden dory. The northern lights have seemed so bright, like nothing could be grander. Well, they're just waves of the moon boat made by the Newfoundland commander. And don't you sigh and say, oh my, with gross exaggeration. He'll tell you the dream was true when Codfish Dan awakens. You might think it's goofy, but the man in the moon is a newbie, sailing on to glory, away in the golden dory. You might think it's goofy, but the man in the moon is a newbie, sailing on to glory, away in the golden dory, sailing on to glory, away in the golden dory.
See ya.